Hello, friends, and welcome back to What Page Are You On? We have missed you, and many apologies for the slow start to the 2018 podcasting year. We both had a lot going on, but it's broken our hearts to disappoint our loyal friends who are waiting for new material. Here we are, and we is me, Bethany Rutter, and my co-host,
Alice Slater.
Alice and I are romantics at heart, and we are riding the wave of last week's Valentine's Day. So this episode is called Different Kinds of Love. We are going to be talking about a few books we've read recently that deal with love, romance, and passion. Let's begin. Before we start...
I was just going to say, we should mention...
Alice's cat is roaming around, so if you hear any strange mischief noises, it is the cat.
He's called Storky.
Storky, the big ginger cat.
Yeah.
Cool, so I'm happy to be here, Alice.
I'm so happy to be here.
I've missed this. We've got our... Coke Zero Cherries.
Hashtag not spawns.
Hashtag absolutely not spawn by no one. We would love to be.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to get into the pockets of Big Cherry. What was that? Was that a cat noise?
That's the other cat. Wait,
oh my god. Okay, pause.
Pause.
Okay. Alice is back. What should we start with?
Okay, I think we should start with Bones of Grace. Because I feel like it's the only one... that doesn't fit in with the other three.
Kind of. Okay, let's go.
Oh, no, that's not true at all. They all have one thing in common.
I agree, there is one thing in common.
So somehow, when we did the kind of brainstorming which books we wanted to talk about, we've ended up with four books that actually have forbidden love in them.
Yeah, or like romance that is secret. I was thinking that today. I was like, why do I love all of these books? Like, why do all of these books appeal to me? They're not just about, like, romance. They're about, like, naughty romance.
Forbidden fruit. So let's talk about Bones of Grace because I confessed before we hit record that I hadn't finished it.
So, unfortunately, Alice and I, because of our extremely busy lives, only agreed about a week ago what we were going to record today, given that we had time to record together. So, we've had a mere week to read and reread four books. And, yeah, so the one that neither of us had read was The Bones of Grace by Tamina Annam. And, yeah, so neither of us have actually been able to finish it, and about that we feel very bad, but...
But then discovering that it's actually the third book in a trilogy, as you said, that loosely related to doesn't really matter.
Yeah, that it's not, but... like, three books that all deal with the same people.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, more conceptual and loose than that. But, yeah, this was a romance between a... paleontology postgrad student at Harvard called Zubeda and a dude that she meets just before she is going to go on a very important dig abroad. She meets a dude called Elijah and they really like hit it off and fall in kind of love, but they really only have like a few days together before she is going on this big dig, but she already has a BF back home in Bangladesh, BF from her childhood, who she has known, yeah, her whole life. And, yeah, it's kind of about, like, her perpetuating this very brief and passionate interest that she has in this dude, Elijah, while she is living the rest of her life and carrying out her work. That's a fair description of...
Yeah, I would say so. As I said, I feel like, so how far in did you get? I guess you were...
I was about audio, a third. So. Yeah, I was listening to this on audiobook because I was like, this is a smart way for me to try and, like, read books and also listen to stuff at the same time, just to be able to try and get through all the stuff we needed to read for today. And I didn't own this book in hard copy, so yeah, I listened to it on audiobook, and I think I listened to about a third of it.
I think I read about a third of it. And I don't know, I mean, so the problem that I had, which I guess isn't necessarily a problem, because things can happen this way, but I didn't get it about Elijah. I just didn't get it. Like, he's just such an average, ordinary man.
Yeah, I wonder what was so good about him. Because she was really cool. Like, I thought she was cool. Like, an interesting,
super interesting,
yeah, like, motivated, really talented, intelligent paleontologist. Like, who the fuck is a paleontologist who is obsessed with this, like... whale early whale that was like a walking thing, like when whales had legs, like this is like her area of interest. And I was like, yeah, cool, she's cool, but yeah, maybe all right. Like,
I don't know, I didn't really feel that. I also felt like the whole situation was really strange. Like, I loved all the kind of university
bits. Yeah, the campus life stuff
that I was here for, but I don't know, like, she went straight from like meeting this guy to like going and meeting his entire family
at his grandmother's funeral.
Invited her to his grandmother's funeral, and I just found that really fucking weird.
Yeah, do you know what I really liked about it, especially the early bits, is I really liked reading that kind of like East Coast college campus stuff from the point of view of like a foreign student.
Yeah,
I'd never had that before. I've always read it from the point of view of like a very kind of like a kind of white, generally middle-class American point of view, or like a white working-class American point of view, someone who feels kind of out of place there, like in The Secret History.
Yeah.
Which we're thinking about at the moment because our friend Beth is currently reading it. But yeah, no, I really liked reading it from like this kind of, yeah, foreign student point of view. And in a way, it kind of felt like she felt less out of place than the dude in The Secret History does.
Yeah, because I think ultimately the guy Richard in The Secret History is on the whole a very strange man.
Mm.
He always feels very kind of, he always feels like an outsider. He lies, he ducks, he kind of hides from people.
Whereas she's just like a cool, yeah.
Like she has like a group of cool friends, and all of that stuff felt really real to me, and that's the kind of
fit that we like. Yeah.
That's what I'm here for. The paleontology stuff, I was like, oh, nice that that's what she's into, but I wasn't that interested in it. And then, yeah, alas, the other thing with it is that it's about a 400-page book, but that print is tiny and the margins are small.
Like, yeah, that's
a long book.
This is how we got catfished, unfortunately. Yeah. We both wanted to read this book. We wanted it to be a part of the four books that we talked about, but unfortunately, in order to record today, it was just too long. The font was too small, the audiobook was too many hours long, and we messed up.
We fucked it.
We fucked
it. Anyway, so we'll just scratch it off the list. That's done.
Yeah, we're very sorry that we have... we can't do better by that book.
And of course, we didn't have to even go into this. We could have just...
pretended that we... Yeah. No.
Gotta be real.
We tried. We tried to have four. Okay, what... Where do we want to go now?
Oh my god. Let's start with...
Call Me By Your Name.
Call Me By Your Name.
By Andre Aciman.
Spicy.
I am upset. Oh, I'm just upset.
Did you find it upsetting?
I found it very upsetting. Yeah. You haven't seen the film, have you?
I haven't seen the film.
Oh my god. I have so much to say. I could literally spend... I'm glad we didn't begin by talking about Call Me By Your Name, because I was like, we could just spend the whole episode talking about this. I feel very upset. How do you feel, Alice?
So, I mean, I was sad. It was sad. But we can't really go into it because of spoilers. Hashtag spoils.
I think a lot of people will have seen the film.
Yeah.
I do think a lot of people... Okay, I'm going to, you know... I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, I think many people who listen to What Page Are You On will have seen the film Call Me By Your Name.
Okay, so we're just going
to
go all in.
I think we need to go all in. Because I also think that the book doesn't really... It's not like... I don't know, I think it's quite obvious from the beginning how it ends. Or what does and doesn't happen.
Well, it has that kind of retrospective voice, doesn't it? So you know straight away that they didn't end up getting married.
Yeah, and living together for the rest of their lives. Yeah, okay, so the book Call Me By Your Name by Andre Aciman is about a 17-year-old boy called Elio who spends his summers in his family's home in Italy with his parents, and every year his dad, who is a university lecturer, professor, researcher, has a different... kind of research assistant / house guest over the summer who comes and stays with them. And this, in the year where Elio is 17, is a 24-year-old postgraduate student called Oliver, who is from an East Coast town in America. And it's just about the kind of blossoming friendship / romance / sexual relationship between the two of them. Is that an okay description?
Yeah, although I feel like the word blossoming suggests that it's kind of gentle and gradual, whereas I feel like
it is not.
As soon as Elio sees him, he's like, fuck me.
Yeah, I get. Yeah, no, I don't know.
You feel like it was more gradual?
Yeah, because I feel like there was a time when Elio resented him being there and saw him as like an inconvenience.
Oh, yeah, no, I suppose you're right, because he starts off feeling massively intimidated, like the way that he says later. He's very.
Later.
Later. Yeah. Oh, God. He's like, he feels very dismissed by him. Okay, no, you're okay. We'll go with the word blossoming.
Yeah.
I'm just quibbling.
But yeah, I really loved the film. So I saw the film before I read the book. Now that I've read the book, I admire the film a lot more. And I really liked it in the first place. Because I think it has really done the book a good service in the way it's been adapted. It's slightly different. It ends much sooner. The film ends much sooner than the book does.
Do they not have like the kind of
There is no
reunions.
Never once he leaves.
See, that is so much more heartbreaking. I think that's why I didn't find the book that heartbreaking, because who ends up with their 17-year-old like summer fuck buddy? You know, like that. It just, I don't think I ever really imagined that they would. Have a relationship. What does a 17-year-old and a 24-year-old in such different points in their lives
have in common anyway? Really have?
So for me, even though it was heartbreaking because that love and that lust is so well realized, like, so obviously, you know, you really feel that pain. At the same time, I wasn't broken by it because I didn't really want it to work out for them anyway.
Yeah, and what I always say about the film Call Me By Your Name, and what I really like about the film, is that it is very moving and lovely, but it is kind of light and playful as well. Whereas I found this book very heavy and sad and dark. And I found that Elio in the book is kind of really intense and kind of creepy.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Whereas Timothée Chalamet's performance in the film, I don't know, he doesn't have that same level of like interior darkness. I think, yeah, I think the film is perfect as the film and the book is perfect as the book, but they're quite different while also having many scenes that are identical.
Mm-hmm.
And the best bit of the film...
Peach.
Two of the best bits of the film are identical in the book, which is the peach bit where Elio wanks into a peach.
Yeah.
And also there is a bit where Elio's dad speaks to him about what he assumes has happened between Elio and Oliver. And that is almost word for word the same as what appears in the film. And I'm really glad that those two key scenes remain the same.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really like the book, even though I found it very different to the film and at times quite difficult. Like, you have to kind of read every word. It's very dense. The sentences are very long.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't have that lightness that the film has. I think you should watch the film. I think you'd like it.
I definitely will. I'm so lazy. I never watch movies. But I will. Like, it's on my list. And
Armie Hammer is so fucking good looking.
Maybe I'll watch it this weekend.
You should watch it this weekend.
Maybe I will.
And yeah, Oliver is very well cast because he is literally the best looking dude in the world. But yeah, I found reading Elio's anticipation of missing Oliver when he returns to America very sad. Oh my God, that's a big cat noise.
Yeah, I'm just gonna pause. I'm just gonna let him in because he's freaking out. He knocks at the window like a fucking ghoul. It scares the shit out of me.
Like a little Swedish vampire child.
Ready?
Yeah, I think the thing that I found the hardest and saddest about Call Me By Your Name, the book, was the fact that they get together relatively late in Oliver's stay with the family. Mm-hmm. And knowing, I think just listening to Elio's interior thoughts about missing him before he's gone and like the absence, I don't know, just anticipating his loss, I found very sad. But yeah, it just felt so much more like crushing in the book, whereas in the film it was kind of like, this was an important experience for Elio, but it would never be kind of the thing that made or broke him.
Because it very much defines him in the book.
Yeah.
Like, it's the defining moment of his life.
Yeah. And it's like, there's a thing about how, like, are there kind of two versions of him that are kind of out there in the world? Like, the one that met Oliver and kind of didn't. Or there's something about that. I also found it really... It's very physical. It's like very kind of about bodies and like weird duality, like humanness, and like they literally look at each other's shits as like a romantic bonding thing. Like, that's really intense, and like I'm kind of into it.
I was gonna say I'm into it.
Yeah,
like kind of weird, gross intimacy.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I do feel like the scene where he actually eats the peach. Oh, I don't know, man. That one's really stayed with me. And I know that, like, whenever anyone mentions this book or this movie, everyone says peach. Peach comes up immediately. There is a reason. Like,
yeah,
that
it's very graphic and memorable.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought I would read this in a couple of days and would just be talking about it. I thought if I run out of time, it doesn't matter because I've seen the film.
Mm-hmm.
But it really does matter. It's really different. So I'm really glad that I read it properly. And yeah, it took a lot longer to read than I thought it would, partly because of like the long sentences. And yeah, there's just a lot in it. It's pretty dense. Yeah, I'm really glad that this was one of our set texts for this week.
Set texts.
Yeah.
I'm also glad because the book is only really available because of the movie.
Yeah.
It had gone out of print, so in hard copy. So I think I mentioned this before at some point on the podcast, but in case I didn't, our dear internet friend, Ms. Claire Biddles.
I know the one.
Yeah, it's one of Claire's favourite books. And so she read The Pink Hotel, and in return, I was supposed to read Call Me By Your Name, but I could only find it in hard copy online for like huge amounts of money, like 30, 40 quid for a paperback. So yeah, I was really glad to see that, you know, the movie got, you know, the movie came out and we got, you know, two different
reissues.
Movie cover, but then also just a regular cover as well.
Yeah, we're very blessed.
Yeah, bought it back.
Yeah. Oh yeah, something that I want to say about Call Me By Your Name that I think is not being said enough is that especially the book is explicitly a very, like, bisexual book.
I was really hoping that you were going to say that.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to slip in bisexual there as a joke in case you're going to say something different.
No.
Because it's serious and it is worth talking about.
Yeah.
Explicitly bisexual.
And, like, not just both of them have sex with not just each other, but women. It is written that that is what Elio wants. He wants man and woman. Like, that is written down on the page. And I feel like that is also true of the film. Like, it is no different. Like, in the film, they both have sex with each other. The characters of Marzia and Chiara, who are the girls from the local area that they both separately sleep with. Like, especially with Elio and Marzia, that's like... those scenes are like quite sexy. Like, it's not a kind of awkward teenage fumbling thing that is meant to show that he's not really into it. Like, it's also true in the film, in my opinion, and I think that's really cool. Yeah, I don't know, like, kind of heterosexuality is not used to show that their relationship is like better or more sincere. It's just like part of life's rich tapestry. Like, they are into each other, they are into women. It's just how it is. And I really like that.
I feel like the way that Elio feels about Oliver and the way that he feels about Maurizio, it's very different, but not necessarily because of his kind of, I don't know, struggle with his sexuality. He doesn't struggle with his sexuality at all. He wants to bang them both.
Yeah.
But he feels, I think, he's so kind of in awe of Oliver. I feel like with Maurizio, he always kind of feels like he can have her.
Yeah, like it's allowed. Him. Yeah.
Yeah, she chases him. It's not, there's nothing forbidden about it. He doesn't obsess about her because she is available to him. Whereas Oliver, for lots of reasons, he's older, his intellect, the position that he has within the family home, there's lots of reasons why he can't have Oliver. So when he finally does, it just completely overwhelms him.
Yeah, because I was thinking, like, why can't they... Why does it have to be a secret? Because that was what we realized was the kind of uniting feature of mm-hmm. all of the books we read was that there was some kind of secret or forbidden element. And yeah, I guess that's why Oliver and Elio has to be a secret. And I guess, like, it was the 80s or something. I don't know.
I think it's just, yeah, it's like back in the day, the age gap is, yeah. I, you know, in my opinion, is quite significant. And particularly, the age gap in that, you know, between those two specific ages. Yeah, I think there's a few solid reasons why it was... I think also the reason why it was secret for a lot of the book is because nothing had happened between them yet.
Yeah.
So before anything happens, it has that kind of obsessive, exhausting kind of rigor to it, you know?
Yeah.
Which all the other two books we're going to discuss also have, like, that kind of completely consuming...
That's what I love. That's my favourite thing to read in any book, is about people who are obsessed with someone, like, who are romantically obsessed. I love it. It is literally the best thing in the whole world.
Yeah, you know, I really love first-person narrations that have an obsession in there.
Yeah.
But for me, it can also be super dark.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be romance. I love a good stalking narrative, you know?
You should read Patricia Highsmith.
I should, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
I've read Carol, but that's...
That's like a chill one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I loved Calling by Your Name. And I think if you haven't seen the film, it doesn't matter whether you read the book or see the film first. I would just recommend you do both, because they are so similar and so different and both so good at what they do. And yeah, it makes you really admire how well cast the film is, makes you really admire how well and judiciously adapted the film is. It cuts out a lot of stuff that when you read the book, you're like, yeah, I see how that could go. Like, I get that. It works so well in the book, but I see how that could go. But yeah, something that's different about the film that I mentioned earlier is that it ends when Oliver leaves and they never see each other again. And I think that kind of works better, whereas in the book they meet up at least once, twice more in their life.
Yeah.
One quite soon after Oliver goes, and then once quite far into the future, like 15 years or something later. And that, I think... I much prefer in the book. I like the idea that they speak on the phone.
Okay, good. And that's it. Yeah. Me too. To me, that felt really realistic. And also, there is something like, because he is already anticipating that longing and that missing of him, I don't think he ever imagines that he will see Oliver as an older man.
Yeah.
And there's something just really beautiful about it.
Yeah, yeah, that it existed in this one summer and then it's gone. Oh yeah, there's one bit of the book that I really didn't like, which is not in the film, which is when they go to Rome before Oliver goes home. There's that really long and really kind of boring like dinner party bit after the reading in the bookshop. That's not in the book. And that's not in the film at all.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like the book Call Me By Your Name wears its intellectualism very well until that point, when it's just these very kind of boring poets and academic people chatting, and I found that very heavy and I didn't really get what it was adding to the book. I didn't understand the San Clemente thing.
What was the San Clemente?
It's a story. It's something, a poet there in the book whose author it is the reading of.
Yeah.
It's Elio's favourite poem from that book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then he kind of tells a story, and there's some chat about Thailand and some really long anecdote about...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just found that so boring, and I'm really glad it's not in
so, like,
the film.
Truthfully, do they go to Rome in the film?
In the film... So it's actually set somewhere different. The film is not set where the book is set.
Okay.
So the book is set by the coast,
yeah,
and then they go to Rome. The film is set like inland, and they go to, I think it's like Milan.
Okay.
So it's set in the north rather than the south in the film. That bit is in the film, the bit where they go somewhere together before Oliver then leaves. That is in the film, but it is much shorter. It's only them two. They don't meet anyone else. They just, like, spend some time together.
Okay, so I actually liked that, all that shit. I know what you mean about the kind of the intellectualism of the conversations. The way you described it made it sound super boring. But
I have that way. I have a way of making things I like sound good and things I don't like sound boring.
It's true, it's true. But I actually quite liked it because it's the only time in the whole book you see them operating as a couple.
Yeah.
Like, so they can be out and open and comfortable and... I mean, I can't remember how frank they are. I don't know if they start off...
Yeah.
I can't really remember, but certainly they end up pissed and...
Making out in an alley.
Snogging in the street and, like... I don't know, I quite enjoyed it. It gave him, like, this one opportunity to, like, try on... Like, he put on his little grown-up pants, and he got to try out, like, living in Oliver's world.
Yeah, without his family. Okay, yeah. Cool, good. See? I think read the book, I think see the film.
Agreed. All right.
Good.
I say agreed, like, I will. It's on my list.
Yeah.
All right.
Read and watch openly bisexual film, Call Me By Your Name, and openly bisexual book, Call Me By Your Name.
Speaking of openly bisexual... Should we bounce to women?
Yes! Let's bounce to women.
I'm so excited to talk
about it. So women isn't out yet, right?
No, not yet. I think it is out.
Early March? 8th of March? Something like that?
8th of March, I think.
Okay, cool.
Because it had a different American release date. It's been a nightmare. Never mind. So Women by Chloe Caldwell. It's out, we think, the 8th of March.
I should have brought Alice's copy with me today. I did not. I am a bad friend and a bad podcaster.
You've been busy. I have been busy. Right off the bat, it's got a nameless narrator who falls in love with a woman called Finn. It reminded me of Pages for You so much.
Yeah, true. Oh,
God, it's so good.
That's really all it's about.
That,
like,
is it. That's
the whole... I was thinking this while I was reading it. I was like, I would love to be brave enough... to write a book that is just about one thing. That I didn't feel compelled to, like, I don't know. I love books that are just about a relationship, and yet I would still feel like I had to make it about something else as well. Even though I love reading books like that. It's just such a, like, intense, kind of brave book.
It's almost, like, indulgent.
Yeah,
you know,
like, I think this relationship is so important, that's what I want to write. Like, I just want to, I don't know, I loved it.
So, I mean, I have some questions.
Hit me.
Okay, so first of all, so Finn is older.
Yes, a lot older.
Yes, I think in her 40s.
I think it's 19 years older.
Yeah, so she'd be like late 30s.
40, yeah.
40, and the narrator is
like
20.
Yeah.
And Finn has been in a long-term relationship with her girlfriend for, like, 10 years.
Yeah.
They live together. It's really serious.
And that is why this is a forbidden love.
That's why it's forbidden fruit.
Yeah.
But I just fucking love it. But one of my questions is... So, Chloe Caldwell is a non-fiction writer. That's what her entire career has been in. And the book references I Love Dick more than once. And I want to ask that, like, forbidden question. Is it autobiographical? Is that why she was able to write such a compelling narrative about this, like, one doomed relationship?
Yeah, and I feel like we are meant to not assume that books by women are autobiographical and that that's, like, a rude thing to do. But I also think that if you don't name your narrator and you are a non-fiction writer and you love I Love Dick... There is no reason why that shouldn't be autobiographical. I think in that instance, that isn't just a kind of imposing this shit on women thing. This is like a very reasonable piecing together of some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it could well be autobiographical.
But I think that's why... That would make sense to me anyway as to why it is so believable and so compelling.
Because it was, like, true, yeah.
Some chapters are less than a page long. Many chapters are less than a page long, which is, I think, why it reminds me of Pages for You as well. Because it's just so readable in that sense. Kind of these breathless snatches is the way I would describe it. And I loved the turn as well. I loved the turn in it that she goes from... They go from friends to this incredibly intense romantic relationship, but where the narrator feels that she is the one in control.
Yeah.
And then there's that moment where it turns. And she realises that she's not in control at all.
Yeah.
And it is so painful to read.
Yeah, because she's like... I think she thinks she's kind of the apple of Finn's eye and then has to reckon with the fact that, like, Finn will never leave the relationship that Finn is in and that that will always be painful for her. Yeah, I really loved it, and I loved how, like... Well, I love Dick, and... That is, like, my dream book. Like, I love Dick. Makes me feel more able to write what I want because it is just so wild and brave. And I think I Love Dick is really the most useful book I have ever read in my life.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I'm very passionate about I Love Dick. By Chris Krauss, FYI. And, yeah, that's what I liked about this book, was just the document of an obsessive feeling that you, I don't know, yeah, I really like people writing honestly about their dark obsessive feelings.
Whereas I feel like, unlike I Love Dick, I think this is much more accessible.
Oh, yeah, yeah, so yeah.
Like, I don't think the two books actually resemble each other that much at all, but she does, she mentions I Love Dick.
Yeah.
Another book that she mentions is Stone Butch Blues.
Yeah, which I haven't read. Leslie Feinberg.
It's Leslie Feinberg. It's available for free. When Leslie passed away, that was one of their kind of legacies, is that their family has kept the book available.
Cool.
So you get a PDF for free, or you can buy a print-on-demand version for, like... In the UK, I think it ended up costing me quite a lot of money because of print-on-demand is generally more expensive than shipping and blah, blah. But it's still, like, I think 15 quid for a paperback. It's not unreasonable.
No.
And I think that's kind of relevant as well, is that what women does that I haven't actually come across much in kind of contemporary literature is that kind of exploration of the kind of lesbian world, like that whole scene and the way that the narrator fits into it. And suddenly she's like learning about this like whole entire history that she had no idea existed, and her like trying to work out whether or not that it is her world. And
yeah. Yeah,
and it,
yeah.
It's like, it's a true coming-of-age story in that sense.
Yeah, even though it feels like she's kind of, in lots of other ways, quite settled in herself and her work and her world. And she has a really good relationship with her mom, and, like, it's a pretty, like, settled person. But then this relationship really, like, shakes her up and exposes her to, like, a lot of new feelings and experiences. So, yeah, in that way, coming of age.
True coming of age. God. I just loved it. I'm already... I know I'm going to reread it this year.
And it's so easy to read.
Yeah,
it's so easy to read, and it's so quick to read. Yeah, it's a delight. It is a delicious little book. It's juicy as hell.
It's one that I almost... If I could delete it from my head so I could take it on holiday with me. Like, it's the perfect holiday book.
Yeah, but you read it in, like, 10 minutes, and then you'd have a whole book in your bag.
That's what I like about holiday books, though.
Okay, cool. Whatever floats your boat, my friend.
I know. Are you, like, the kind of person that just wants to take some great big fucking tome?
Yeah, maybe. Because then I'm, like...
Work your way through it.
Yeah, I can be dedicated to it on holiday, whereas it would take me, like, many commutes to read it.
Mm.
Whereas I read this in bed in one morning. And I know that you read it on a couple of tube journeys.
I read it on the way to work, my lunch hour, and then I finished it on the tube journey back.
Yeah.
And also, like, I physically couldn't... I couldn't have not read it at my lunchtime. I don't always read during the day. It depends what I'm doing. But I was, like, excited. It was sat on my desk, and it was just calling to me to pick it up.
Calling you by your name.
Calling me by your name. That, you know, to go back to that, that is one thing about that book that I did not like. The fucking title is so stupid.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I think it's about that, you know how we were talking about, like the physicalness and the duality of, like, there being, like, two people and versions of themselves and each other, and,
right.
I don't know, yeah, I think Call Me By Your Name and I'll Call You By Mine, like, it, they do that in, like, Oliver asks Elio to call him.
No, so I know that. I remember that. I know, like, where it comes from, but I still think it's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't... Yeah, I think it doesn't explain the novel well. Like, I get where it comes from in the book, but I don't get its significance. Do you remember this mad long argument I had with, do you remember Rob Tamplin?
Yeah.
We had a really long running row that got very heated about the film There Will Be Blood.
Right.
Because I was like, why is it called that? No one says that in the film. It doesn't refer to anything that happens specifically in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, yeah, but the oil is blood. And I was like, so what? Like, so what? That doesn't answer my question. Like, what do you mean? Like, is that a phrase from the Bible? Like, what is it? And he just kept giving me, like, all these bullshit answers, and we just got really angry with each other. And I feel like people could have the same furious rage about Call Me By Your Name.
I guess, so the beef that I have is that I understand, because it's very explicit in the book where it comes from. But to me, it's, like, the least sexy thing. Like, can you imagine boning someone, and then in the middle of sex, they call out their own name?
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm not into, like, it.
You
know, yeah. What?
You can fucking chill out. You're doing fine, but...
Why does... Yeah, I don't get why that's what Oliver wants. That doesn't... Yeah, I don't get it. There Will Be Blood.
Anyway. Yeah. Also, Women, I find to be quite a frustrating title for a book, because it's the same as a Bukowski book called Women. That's just an aside. I found every time I've tried to Google it, when I've forgotten who the author's name is, or just now I was quickly trying to Google to see what the pub date is in the UK, and fucking Bukowski's always coming up there.
Yeah, and yeah,
it's
I feel
like, as well, I feel.
I feel like there has to be a better name for this book than that.
I don't know what it fucking is, but there's a better one.
There has to be a better one. For such a good book, I think it deserves a better name.
Oh god, I loved it so much. I loved Finn. I loved the character, and I love right at the beginning of the book, the narrator kind of says, I'm not going to tell you too much about Finn, because I don't want you to take a dislike to anything about her, because she is so perfect.
Yeah. I remember that. I totally remember reading that and being like, wow, that is so real.
Yeah, she's like, I don't want to tell you, like, her taste in music, or you don't, and it's true, you don't get any details that you don't need.
Yeah.
Like, you get the fact that she dresses very dapper, and that she considers herself butch, and that's kind of part of her education of the narrator, like, it kind of showing her this new world that she's kind of moving through, this kind of queer world. And it's true, you don't find out anything about Finn that you don't need to know.
So true.
Like, there's a moment where Finn mentions that she likes ice cream, and I was like, that's wild.
Oh my god, a person, like, a whole person, rather than just, like, an experience that the narrator is having.
And also, that is something that the book has been criticised for, but I dig it.
Yeah.
I get it. It completely works for me.
Yeah.
I think because Finn feels so real.
And you get how the narrator could fall in love with her.
I've fallen in love with her.
I want to meet Finn.
I really want to meet Finn.
We would strongly recommend you read this book.
Yeah, basically, it's, I think, one that we're all going to get obsessed with.
It's a banger.
It made me think of so many people on Twitter.com as well. There's so many people who I know would really like it.
Yeah. If you, like me, love things about obsessive relationships and being sad about...
Lesbians
and things, then yeah.
Ticks all the boxes.
Yeah. And do read Pages for You and Pages for Her as well.
I still haven't read Pages for Her.
It's not as good, but it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what I'm saving it for. I keep thinking, like, one day it'll be time. And
maybe this is your time.
I'll add it to the old list.
The old TBR, as they say. Cool, okay.
So, final book is another one about affairs, obsessive love. Also has incredibly short chapters and it's incredibly readable. And
my four favourite things. Four things I love. I love that.
And it is Fire Sermon by Jamie Quattro.
So we talked about this, actually, in our books we are looking forward to. In 2018 episode.
So we did.
But we didn't go deep.
We can go deeper. Because just reread it, didn't you?
I reread it today.
I wish I had reread it for this conversation. Because I feel like when I first read it, I had so much to say about it. And I feel like I then just spent the next 4 months saying it to everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone that I came across that was even vaguely interested in this book.
It is so good. Okay. Let me tell you about Fire Sermon. It is about a lady called Maggie, who is married to a dude called Thomas, but she begins an email friendship with a poet whose book she reads, and they hit it off by email, and then it's just about It doesn't even happen in that order. It's quite fragmentary as a novel, and it goes between emails, first-person prose, third-person prose, prayers, conversations. It's just got so much happening, and it all works so well to tell the story of this woman's life and the relationship that she has with her husband and the relationship that she has with this other dude and the relationship that she has with the big man, God. Because one of the things that Maggie and James bond over is the fact that they are both Christians and they are serious about their Christianity, which is something that Maggie's husband, Thomas, does not share. There is a lot of Christianity in this book, and it is fascinating. The way that they think about their relationship through their Christianity, the way it informs what they do, things they talk about, Maggie's kind of conversations with God kind of thing. So my favourite bit of the book is these two pages that happen very early on, page 24, if you have the finished copy, which I interpreted as a conversation with a therapist, but I now think was probably a conversation with God.
Oh, shit. You're so right.
Yeah. Because there isn't a therapist in the... Like, I don't feel like there's...
I don't think so.
Only her daughter goes to see a therapist, a child psychologist, because she's, like, anxious. But yeah, when I first read it, I was like, this is her talking to a therapist who's kind of bored of her shit. But I think, yeah, it's her chatting to God. And yeah, it's so, so good. That conversation is such... Like, I think it's so well written, and it takes about 30 seconds of your life to read. And I just think it's so amazing. And yeah, it is such an amazing book. And I just think in terms of what... how it describes the feelings that she has, both the very strong romantic feelings towards James and the intense feelings of guilt about those feelings, I think it's just so truthful, it's so real and lifelike, and I adore this book.
Yeah, I think it's almost painful.
Yeah. Because
you know that she isn't going to end up with James. Did you ever feel like she was going to leave her husband?
No, because it says in the first few pages...
Yeah,
she basically... She says something about how the fact that they both had very elderly grandmothers was the reason that she knew that they would never end up together. There's something about imagining the length of their life after their spouse had died. I don't know. Basically, you know pretty early on that she's not going to leave her husband. Yeah.
And it's certainly, the whole novel is framed as an affair, so you know that it's not going to work out. But I think there's something about that, how inevitable it is that it's not going to work out. And again, I don't think, she doesn't go to great pains to make her husband sound great.
Amazing. No, and there is a scene where
my God. Yeah.
There is unpleasant scene it's with not her even husband.
That she goes to great. Doesn't go to great pains when he's good. He's, actively bad.
Yeah.
He's actively a really bad guy.
Who's very coercive. She doesn't really want to have sex with him ever. And he tries various tricks to make her have sex with him. Which does not portray him very favourably.
Repulsive.
Yes. But, you know, he's a good dad, so it's chill. Yeah. But, yeah, I kind of like James. I think he seems like a catch.
He does.
I'd have an affair with him.
And I think the fact that they use their Christianity as a reason to have the affair, rather than as a reason to abstain from having an affair, was a very kind of interesting, fresh, unique.
Yeah, and I've said this before about Fire Sermon, but I would like it anyway, because I like books about people having affairs, but I liked it even more because the Christianity and theological angle made it feel really different to stuff I've read before that is about that. Yeah, I've never read anything with that much God in it.
Yeah, I don't think I have either. And at the same time, I would certainly say that if a book that features God heavily is off-putting, that even though it's obviously there very present because it's completely relevant to the plot, at the same time, I didn't necessarily feel overwhelmed by it.
No, like, it was the about their lives.
Of the novel is not just the affair, but how that moment when they choose to cross the line, how that kind of, what's the word I want?
Ripples.
Or ripples, yeah. How it kind of, the ripples that it causes in other areas of their lives. And that, the idea of falling in love with someone on an intellectual level sounds so wanky, but also it's just so believable. It felt so real.
And the way that their emails kind of gently escalate, I found so truthful. I loved reading their kind of back and forth and the way they speak to each other and the way that that becomes more and more familiar, and then the things that they don't talk about. And I think there's the bit that I found really there's just a line at the end of one of their emails where I think James says to Maggie, let's not talk about our spouses.
She makes an effort to ask after his wife, and he says, he answers everything else in the email and then says, let's not talk about them again. And that's what that is the exact moment where I feel that they crossed the line.
Yeah.
Because then
they have acknowledged it.
Yeah, there is no possible way to deny that what they're doing is more than just kind of becoming friends.
Yeah.
To actively try and compartmentalize their marriages, like, to leave that shit at the door. And it's the same in women as well, that Finn just refuses to discuss her partner.
Yeah, we don't know anything about Finn's partner.
We don't even know her name.
No, I love that.
Yeah, me too.
And I think that's really interesting. And something else I found really interesting about Fire Salmon is that when she does talk about the affair with her husband basically says, he knows that she's having this extremely intense emotional turmoil over another dude, but he says, like, please tell me you didn't sleep with him. And I think that's so fascinating, because we have talked about this. Like, we've talked about this in a pub not that far from here, how this is a question that I just find so fascinating, is, like, why is lying awake at night emotional turmoil okay, but if you bone someone, it suddenly becomes, like, the end of the world? Like, why doesn't her husband of many years, why does it matter whether they boned or not if she can have this, like, intense emotional turmoil thing? I find it fascinating.
Why isn't that enough?
Isn't that too much? Why is the boning the part that worries you?
And I think, certainly in the context of this book, I think with this particular character, it's because of the value that he places on sex.
Yeah, true. And he's buying her all these sex toys and trying to coerce her. It's so
fucking gross. Yeah. His whole attitude towards sex and her body is really gross. And I think there is, like, a kind of vibe that they got married really young because they had sex.
So there
is this vibe that sex basically is what kind of ended up
dictating the...
Yeah, like, lumbering her with this fucking douche to begin with.
Yeah.
And that the affair, it doesn't start with sex. They haven't met before it kicks off, right? Like, she writes to him. They don't meet until they've already kind of crossed the emotional line. And then that's where the book opens. It opens in the cab where one of them makes the decision,
to their hotel.
Yeah, they make the decision to not get out of the cab, to go on to the next hotel together, which has to be one of the sexiest pieces of writing.
Yeah.
God, it is so sexy. Like, the tension in that taxi. Oof.
Yeah, it's almost like the sex that they have, that James and Maggie have, that's not even, like, the highlight of their relationship. That's not, like, the best part for them or for us to read. I think the best part of their relationship is reading, like, their emails and their conversations and seeing these people just completely delighted to find each other and find someone that they can talk to about the stuff that they want to talk about. Because clearly they aren't finding that with their partners. And, like, the sex isn't really that important, but because, like, culturally it is, that's what undoes them.
Yeah, agreed. Also, I feel that it's not something that they're getting from anyone in their lives.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not just that they're not being fulfilled, like, intellectually and emotionally by their partners. It is also this connection to God the only other person that they have that kind of unconditional love and support from is God.
Yeah.
And then to have that shared thing, especially because that's kind of quite an unfashionable thing to be passionate about.
Yeah.
You know, so to...
Poetry and God.
The cat just jumped on the table and really scared me.
You little fiend. Yeah, they're like both well into poetry and God, which are two...
Nice combo.
Yeah. Fire Sermon is out this week, so if you like the sound of our chat about it... I know we've gone pretty, like, deep on details of the plot, but it just, it's not a book you read for the plot.
No, because it opens with the affair starting. Yeah. And it's completely, I think, because it's told in such a fragmented way, I don't think there is any way that we could discuss this book and put, like, spoiler warnings up, because...
The only spoiler is they have an affair. Like, that's literally, that's what the book is about. And, yeah, it's just not a book you read for the plot. It's a book you read for the experience of reading it and the things that you read in it and the way that Jamie Quatro talks about love and relationships and family life and, yeah, wanting to escape from that and, yeah.
God, it's such a banger.
It's so good. I'm so passionate about this book. I'm so happy that it exists.
I feel like this has been an episode where we've talked about three books that I would honestly just recommend that everyone
picks
up immediately. And they all go so well together.
Forbidden fruit, whether that's a peach or metaphorical.
I couldn't think of any other food stuff in any of the other books. Oh, banging.
Banging. I've had a delightful time. I'm so glad we're back together.
Me too. I miss you.
I miss you too. I wonder what we'll chat about next time.
Well, we have decided, I think.
Oh, yeah. We scared the cat. Cool. So if you want to get in touch with us for any reason, preferably good, we can be found on Twitter at WhatPagePod. Alice, you are looking after the old gram.
I'm on the gram, which is also WhatPagePod.
My Twitter is at Bethany Rutter. Alice, you are...
At Smoking Tofu, no G.
That's kind of it, right?
That's it.
You can email us. We are whatpagepod@gmail.com. We have been very naughty, and we have fallen out of the good habit that we had of transcribing these episodes for anyone who wants it, but especially for people who have... hearing problems. But as of this week, we are trying out Trint, so fingers crossed that's going to work really well, and there will be a perfectly clean transcription available online. So yeah, I'm hoping that Trint works well for us.
Fingers crossed.
But yeah, we will see you as soon as is humanly possible.
Love you all. Bye.
Bye.